Taipei, by Herman Melville. Chapter 1. 6 months at sea. Yes, reader, as I live, 6 months out of sight of land, cruising after the sperm whale beneath the scorching sun of the line, and tossed on the billows of the wide rolling Pacific. The sky above, the sea around, and nothing else. Weeks and weeks ago, our fresh provisions were all exhausted. There is not a sweet potato left, not a single yam. Those glorious bunches of bananas, which once decorated our stern and quarter-deck, have, alas, disappeared. And the delicious oranges, which hung suspended from our tops and stays, they too are gone. Yes, they are all departed, and there is nothing left us but salt horse and sea biscuit. Oh, ye stateroom sailors, who make so much ado about a 14 days' passage across the Atlantic, who so pathetically relate the privations and hardships of the sea, where after a day of breakfasting, lunching, dining off 5 courses, chatting, playing whist, and drinking champagne punch, it was your hard lot to be shut up in little cabinets of mahogany and maple, and sleep for 10 hours, with nothing to disturb you but those good-for-nothing tars shouting and tramping overhead. What would ye say to our 6 months out of sight of land? Oh, for a refreshing glimpse of one blade of grass, for a snuff at the fragrance of a handful of the loamy earth. Is there nothing fresh around us? Is there no green thing to be seen? Yes, the inside of our bulwarks is painted green, but what a vile and sickly hue it is, as if nothing bearing even the semblance of verdure could flourish this weary way from land. Even the bark that once clung to the wood we use for fuel has been gnawed off and devoured by the captain's pig, and so long ago, too, that the pig himself has in turn been devoured. There is but one solitary tenant in the chicken coop, once a gay and dapper young cock, bearing him so bravely among the coy hens. But look at him now. There he stands, moping all the day long on that everlasting one leg of his. He turns with disgust from the moldy corn before him, and the brackish water in his little trough. He mourns, no doubt, his lost companions, literally snatched from him one by one, and never seen again. But his days of mourning will be few, for Mungo, our black cook, told me yesterday that the word had at last gone forth, and poor Pedro's fate was sealed. His attenuated body will be laid out upon the captain's table next Sunday, and long before night will be buried with all the usual ceremonies beneath that worthy individual's vest. Who would believe that there could be anyone so cruel as to long for the decapitation of the luckless Pedro? Yet the sailors pray every minute, selfish fellows, that the miserable fowl may be brought to his end. They say the captain will never point the ship for the land, so long as he has in anticipation a mess of fresh meat. This unhappy bird can alone furnish it, and when he is once devoured, the captain will come to his senses. I wish thee no harm, Peter, but as thou art doomed, sooner or later, to meet the fate of all thy race, and if putting a period to thy existence is to be the signal for our deliverance, why, truth to speak, I wish thy throat cut this very moment, for oh, how I wish to see the living earth again. The old ship herself longs to look out upon the land from her hawse holes once more, and Jack Lewis said right the other day, when the captain found fault with his steering. "Why do you see, Captain Vangs?" says bold Jack. "I'm as good a helmsman as ever put hand to spoke, but none of us can steer the old lady now. We can't keep her full and by, sir. Watch her ever so close, she will fall off, and then, sir, when I put the helm down so gently and try to coax her to the work, she won't take it kindly, but will fall round off again. And it's all because she knows